Now we are.
Here we are.
All right. Hey, everyone. It is January 22nd, 2020. That's a lot of twos. And we want to say welcome to the call. So glad you're here. Those who are live, we've got about 20 guys on the line live. And those of you who are watching the recording, you're welcome too. And I just want to say Happy New Year first. It's a new, not only a new year, but a new decade. And it feels like a time for reflection and a fresh start. And so we wanted to kick off this January call by saying we want you to have a 2020 vision for 2020, okay, so that you have 2020 clarity about your life. And that can be hard if you're in, you know, what feels like a shit show. It can just seem like you're lost in the fog. And yet it's the clarity that will give you a greater sense of well-being, a greater sense of calm. That mountain lion energy comes from, okay, at least for today, I know what's going on. I know what's important to me. I know what's in front of me that I need to do. I've got, as Steve always says, I got from now until it's bedtime. And that's about it. Can't do tomorrow today. Can only do today. So the clarity that you guys are wanting more than anything is, what do you want in your life? What life do you want to create? Including and probably forefront in your mind, your relationship, your marriage, wherever it's at. You want to get more and more clear on what kind of relationship do you want, even if it ends up not being with your current partner. And the more you get clear on that, the calmer you get about creating it. And so understanding that you get to create and choose is an important step. In other words, in limbo land, a lot of guys feel like they don't have any choice. They're waiting for their wife, soon to be ex-wife, whatever, to make a decision. They're waiting for the other shoe to drop,
to tell them how the rest of their life is going to go.
Exactly. And it's an awful place to be. If any of you are there, if any of you have been there, I was certainly there at one point. And you feel helpless. You feel powerless. You feel that you're just walking around on, you know, eggshells. But the truth is, that's not what's going on. You have just as much right, and you have just as much, you're entitled to just as much choice in the situation moving forward as she does. Just because she pulled the trigger doesn't mean that she holds all the cards, to mix a metaphor. Maybe she's playing poker in the Old West. But it feels that way. It's sort of like if you go in, and Steve and I were talking about this yesterday, you go into and you really, 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 really need a job. And you just need it desperately. Well, what you feel like when you walk in is, oh, please hire me. Please hire me. That's all you're thinking. Please hire me. Instead of, I wonder if I would enjoy working here. I wonder if I would like working with this person. I'm going to have to see how it plays out to see whether I accept their offer.
Yeah. And even one step higher, I wonder if they deserve me.
Right. Yeah. And it can seem far away to get to that point of clarity where you when I initially got hit by the divorce bomb, all I wanted was to put it back together. That's what I thought I wanted. And at some point along the way in my work, I realized that there could be a moment in the future when I didn't actually want to stay in the marriage. And it's weird because she was the one pushing the divorce and she pushed it all the way through and it was her thing. But I got clear. I got clarity on, wait a minute, I also get to choose. This is not a one-way street. And it helped a lot to know that I could do that. And I would say in the first year after my divorce, there was a point where I was like, I even thanked her. I said, thank God you pulled the trigger. And I know that sounds weird, maybe, for someone who is at a point where, if you're at a point where you've just entered this perfect storm. But it can happen. It's one of the possible futures.
Yeah. When Tim told me last night, we had a beer at a local pub that takes dogs. So we had our dogs had a date night. And he said, this weekend you're playing cards, the game of spoons with your ex-wife at her house, your old house, right?
Yeah.
I guess he was over there with the daughters. And you guys are laughing and talking and going deeper. And you are more connected, more intimate as ex-spouses now. Who knows where it's going to go, right? There's all kinds of innuendo about where your life might go in 2020. You could become cohabitating again with your ex-wife. You could get married again. We don't know. You don't give a fuck, right? You actually don't give a fuck because you're still saying, would I like to work here? I wonder if I'd like to work here, right? And she knows. And she knows that. And this is what makes Tim so damn attractive now to the ex-wife, that for now he's just playing cards. And we know that this is how it happens. Sometimes being overly attached to the story that you have in your head, that 2020 is either going to be a shit show or I'm going to save my marriage. There's not just two options. In my ebook, The Hard to Swallow Secret, I ask, what is your level of fear about divorce from 0 to 10? And if you're between a 7 and a 10 of fear of divorce, your anxiety and the sweat and the shivering and the fear in your body is making you think and do a lot of stupid shit. And that's why this in the Divorce Bomb course, we're trying to get your fear of divorce dialed back to that 2 to 4 range, to where you're not nervous anymore. And the second question, what's the likelihood that a man like you is going to live another 20 years exactly like your last 12 months? Well, some guys go, well, and if she has her way, it'll be forever. I'll always be in shit. Well, we want you to say your fear level of divorce is about a 3 or a 4. And we want you to have a 0% likelihood that your next 20 years is going to be exactly like the last year. I want you to know beyond any shadow of a doubt that if you're the one baking the pie, right? We use this pie analogy. If you have a pie of life, you get to decide the ingredients. The problem with us when we get into the zone right at the D-bomb is that the pie has two pieces. 10% is made for work and family, and the other 90% has got two tits and a vagina pie, right? That's all it is. That's all it is. It's one big slice of pie.
That's an image, Steve. That.
There's a band in the 60s. Tim reminded me had an album cover with an apple pie that had it. Never mind.
Yeah, that's another story.
So part of looking to 2020 is realizing if you're the pie maker, you get to take that 90% that you're putting all this hyper-focus and hyper-expectation, hope, and fear into, and you get to carve it back a little bit and realize that there is more in the year 2020 that you get to create for yourself. There are other chapters you can write, even in the midst of a human being called wife who is uncertain. She just doesn't know. She needs some space, too much pressure, right? Even in the midst of a human being who has these things, you get to take the weight off your shoulders and go, guess what? I get to make my own pie. And that's why we wanted to start off with this introduction, is just to have you realize that this is the beginning of a year where we want you to feel you have agency in creating the future. Again, as if she was abducted by aliens, what would you do now? You know, what would you do now? She didn't get hurt. She's not dead. She's just gone. Aliens got her. They're her. She's their problem.
There was a show on Netflix in the last year called Bandersnatch, and it was a choice. Okay, that's not a joke about Snatch. Okay, your mind is just in a different place. And it was a thing where it was a choice point thing where the thing would stop at certain points and you'd click and choose what direction the story was going to go. That's really your life right now. Do you remember they used to have books like that, Choose Your Own Ending, Choose Your Own Adventure? Mm-hmm. But what it feels like when this happens is that the book of how you thought it was going to be, that's what it says in the corner, how I thought it was going to go, that fantasy book, it's like all those chapters were, you know, those chapters in the future were torn out and thrown away to the wind, right? And the book was burned. But that's not what happened. What happened is there was a choice point and it went a different way. And there's more choice points as you write this new story, as you write your own adventure. It's not the end, you know, close of your life, certainly. And it's a nice way to, if you can reframe it of, I actually have possibilities as opposed to things being just over. Now, One thing that is over, though, is, and this is a good thing to accept completely, is your old relationship is over. And I can say that to every man listening and every man watching. If they're in this course, their old relationship is over. Now, that doesn't mean you're divorced or will get divorced. It doesn't mean that you won't have a relationship with this, with your wife, your partner. It just means the old thing, the thing that led everything that came before this, you know, breakdown, that's done. That's like that chapter is done. We close that chapter because nobody wants to go back and relive that stuff. And if you do, you might want to rethink that. Sometimes our looking back at stuff as we, like I said, you look back at the beginning of a year and you also look forward, right? And you look back and sometimes all you remember is the good stuff. But if you get really, really honest, you go, you know, it was a mixed bag for sure. And I don't want to recreate what I had 12 months ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. That's not really what I want. I want something better. And you may be feeling, and I want it with this woman I love. That's it. But I want it better. I want a fresh start. And that's what you get. New chapter, blank page. Okay. Yeah. And she's not the only one with a, you know, writing utensil. Right?
Guys, you have any comments on the introduction? We just hit 1:15 and it's about what we planned before we go into questions. Anybody feel something there or think of something you wanted to say? If you don't know how to raise your hand, just unmute yourself and go, hey, hey, hey.
Hey, it's Marek here. It's the first time I'm attending this call. I'm based in Prague, so sorry if my English is not perfect.
Your welcome, English Marek. Is perfect. Yeah.
I mean, this call has only just started, and the information you've given, I've already learned something.
what was one insight?
Good, what do you
mean? Because me and my wife are separated. We've been separated for 3.5 months now. You know, first couple of months, I was just devastated, couldn't sleep, you know, terrible time. I actually recently kind of began joking about it, so I'm getting to feel better. But I did think that it's her who calls the shots. I did think that I'm just kind of sitting and waiting and working on myself, you know, working on my pies, as they recommend on various other YouTube channels, applying no contact, smart contact, you name it. I'm kind of joking. I'm not applying no contact. We have kids and we have to communicate. But, you know, I'm not chasing her. Or calling her. I'm just responding when she calls me. But my life has been in the last 3 months about kind of sort of waiting for what she does. And today I heard, well, I have my own choices too. And I mean, probably hasn't occurred to me, to be honest.
So what's one choice you might make that you haven't yet?
I don't know. I can't think of anything right now. But I don't know. I don't have an answer to that right now.
Well, yeah. How about something simple? How about go out for a beer with a friend without asking permission? So most guys ask if they can go out with a friend. How about telling her that you're going to be gone for 3 hours with a friend? That's just a very simple example of a choice that most men can't make because they feel like they're not allowed to.
Yeah. Well, we are separated, so she kind of doesn't give a shit what I do. But
there's that.
But yeah, I think what I should do is kind of to begin to live a bit more, and I think I've been trying. Peter, who is also based in Prague and who is on this call, we met. Yeah. We can. That was amazing. Yeah, I think the solution—not solution, but one of the things I can do is just start having a life. What I need to do is to find a mission. I bought a couple of books about that. I'm yet to read them, but I think that's my next mission, to find a mission.
Well, that is a mission. You're right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Perfect, yes. Mission.
That's great, Marek. I just want to say that even if you're separated, like you just said one thing. You said you're responding to her calls. It's like, So you have two, you have like a number of choices. First of all, you can initiate a call if you need to, or a text if there's something that you need to deal with her. Secondly, you don't always have to answer the phone when she calls, if it's not convenient for you. And you might, you can always tell her, look, if it's an emergency, then text me 911 or something, or whatever the, I don't know what the emergency code is where you live, but, you know, and those are some rules that I had to set up with my ex initially, was when we were separated. It was like, I wanted to very ease, simply without conflict, say, I'm not at your beck and call anymore. Now, I'd say it that way because that sounds kind of, you know, that'll start a fight. But it was just like, hey, you know, I'm not always available to answer the phone. I might have a client, stuff like that. So just know that I'll get back to you.
What I'm gonna have to do is also to kind of introduce some boundaries, because I just, you know, and then there's this fear, you know, I start introducing boundaries and she'll just declare World War III, you know, like we're separated, but with respect to my bank account, it's as if we were not separated, obviously. And there's a couple more things like that. So we're going to have to start talking about these things.
And, yeah, I'm glad you admitted that the fear of setting a boundary, the fear of invoking your consequence based on a non-negotiable term you have, that's the next step. That's the nuts part of this thing, is know what you believe in enough to where you're totally unafraid of the consequences of standing up for it. World War III, well, that'd be a one-sided World War III. She'd just be lobbing bombshells, but they don't hit you.
Yeah.
You don't have to fight back, right?
You got the force field going on and everything.
Yeah. So for fairness, we need to keep moving quickly, Mark. I love your input. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Patrick
raised
his hand. And yeah, thanks, Mark.
And no, thanks for the responses. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hello, all.
Hey,
I just
Patrick.
Want to say that, hi, Tim. Thanks for having us. Thanks for the email reminder, because I would have forgotten. What you said about the fear number, like two or three, that really hit home with me, because I'm kind of there now in terms of being fear of divorce of my wife. The one thing that I'm not a two or three on is my kids. I'm like a 9 or 10 when it comes to my kids. And that's just because I don't want to hurt my kids. I don't want to screw them up.
That means your average is like a 6 then. Right.
Okay, cool. Then I'm
What is it?
I'll take your logic.
Patrick, can you name one very specific fear about your kids that you have?
Yeah, that they'll end up a little crazy in the head by, like, my wife, who is a product of a divorced family.
Mm.
But I will say this. I started doing a lot of work on myself, and then was going to counseling for some stuff that I needed to go to counseling for. And all of a sudden, she's finally going to counseling for herself. Like, she did it voluntarily. I didn't ask her to do it. She did it. So, I mean, I'm seeing progress. And, you know.
By the way, that's called leadership.
Okay, well then.
That's what that
leadership.
Is.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But no, like, so I'm,
yeah, go ahead.
The choose-your-own-adventure thing, though, is that, and what you said earlier about how you kind of got to the point where I wasn't sure if I wanted to be there anymore.
Yeah.
We had a big discussion about trust this weekend in my house, because that's the big issue. She had an emotional affair, hid it from me, found out, crushed me. I went crazy like an idiot. And, well, I was just very wounded, and I acted out like a little boy. But we've gone past that part, too. Now it's... she's asking me to trust her to do the right thing. She's admitted that she done wrong and she made a mistake. And in fairness, I made plenty of mistakes too. I mean, shit, we've been married a long time. So when I trust her, how do I not let my little boy get so worked up and think, you know, she could still be doing that shit that she was doing without being that overbearing, checking on her asshole.
Well, what you just said is true. You don't have any control over. And that's a hard pill to swallow. The fact that, you know, she's going to do what she's going to do. And all you can do is keep your side of the street clean, as we say, and have strong boundaries. I was going to say, and an answer to your children, anyone else, dad watching or on the line, everything you do for yourself in the way of being a better man, having strong boundaries that are healthy, protecting your children, not starting arguments with her, you know, in front of them. All of those things help. You just being a better man will help your children. It's just, it's like fallout almost, or you know, they get it by osmosis when they see you being more mature, more, you know, emotionally regulated, all that. As far as, you know, will she do something awful? I don't know. There's no way of knowing. You can take her at her word. You can extend to her enough trust so that you're not putting anything at jeopardy, except maybe your pride, and see what happens. Maybe not the answer you want, but there's no way to prevent her or, you know, our fear a lot of times is fear of the unknown. So we're trying to prepare ourselves for any ultimate or inevitable, horrible thing that might happen. And you just can't do that. Yeah.
The one thing we can predict with about 90% accuracy, when a man does this work, even in the realm of separating or divorcing his wife, and he becomes strong, calm, confident, and very trustable, very stable and consistent, kids are the canary in the coal mine. The kids start gravitating toward him. They're seeking him out. They're jumping on his phone. They're starting to wonder what's wrong with mommy. And this happened to Tim. Right, the kids become magnets because they trust stable, consistent, adult-like behavior. And when a man does this work, it's amusing to see it happen because he loves the new connection with his kids. It's more vulnerable. It's more honest. But also his wife starts resenting the fact that he's turning the kids against her. And what she's saying is that you being so good is turning the kids against me. And it's almost hard not to laugh. Like, oh, God, sorry about that.
Yeah. That can happen, absolutely, that she starts resenting you. However, when you stay the course of still being an unapologetic but kind and loving man, guess what happened to me? She finally started calling me and going, how do you do it? What are you doing that's different? Because it's total chaos at her house most of the time. And the kids call me and say, can we just move in with you permanently? You know, stuff like that.
Oh.
And I know. And I know that they're teenagers and they're drama queens and all that stuff. So there's that going on. But I just kept doing my thing. And then I tried as hard as possible, and I did this about 9 times out of 10. I didn't lecture my ex. I didn't try to teach her anything. I didn't try to coach her. Because every time I did, it went really awfully. So as a coach, it was my instinct. It's like, well, what you should do is, you know, until she finally asked. And this is real time. I'm telling the real story. This has happened in the last month that she has actually said to me, okay, clearly what you're doing works. Teach me. At which point I was like, well, here's all I can do is tell you what I'm doing and see if it works for you.
And, so, and the truth is that it's who you were being, and what she hasn't picked up yet on is how to be a certain way, the mountain lion female version. She hasn't figured that out, and she's digging it too. Right?
Yeah, so that's an ongoing process that is, you know, maybe if you are together or not. I mean, it would be this, well, Steve and I talk a lot about being a happily divorced man while you're married. You know, it seems like an oxymoron, but you know, to take all of these principles that we teach and all of these practices and do it in the context of a relationship is really the goal. I don't think anybody here wants to be alone for the rest of their lives. So this is not about how to, you know, get out of your marriage and be happy. It's about how to be happy, how to be have a sense of well-being. Anyone else have a comment about
that? Dan Sherman, you're next, and then we'll go to our written questions.
Okay, great.
Dan. Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yep.
Loud and clear.
Okay. I don't know how to get the video on, but I think you got a blank face there. But so your discussion about us getting to make a choice, I made a pretty big one today, actually throughout the day, in that I asked for me and my wife to take a break, to get separated. And Up until this point, it was, I had been waiting for her to make a decision. I had talked to a spiritual counselor earlier today, and she put things in perspective for me that I hadn't thought of before. My situation is similar to a lot of guys. Found out that she was cheating on me and lying about it and things like that. And we've had long, drawn-out conversations about it since I found out, and we've stayed together, still live together, have kids, the whole nine yards. But the counselor that I talked to today basically suggested that I need to make a choice, that I need to put my foot down. And, you know, I have my nuts, and somebody treating me this way or doing this is, you know, goes against my nuts. And she had said to me that, used my kids as an example. She said, if my daughters were married or dating a man who didn't want to be with them or wasn't sure if he wanted to be with them or did these kind of things, cheated on them, what would you tell your daughters? You know, I would tell them, get the hell out. You know, stand up for yourself. I would probably want to grab the guy myself and tell him, you guys are done, you know. And she said, why wouldn't you do that for yourself? So that, you know, hit me pretty plain and clear, and it was so simple. But anyways, I've talked to my wife different times today, and she's actually been very receptive to the idea. I did it in a very calm, loving, you know, I think that it's healthy for both of us to just back away from this and to separate and to work on ourselves, but separate. And I think she agrees with that. And I've been surprised at the level of fear that I had this morning, you know, having this conversation or making this choice. I had told the counselor that I talked to, it was the feeling of jumping off a cliff, you know, and just crashing down to the bottom of the ravine. Yeah, that's what I felt like. Now that I have made this choice and we've talked about it and things have gone a little bit better than what I thought, my fear level is, you know, way down there. It's not a 10 anymore. I don't know where it's at, but it's a lot lower than a 10. So I don't know. We haven't made any concrete decisions when she's moving out, when, you know, how this is going to work. But that's where I'm at, and you know, be curious to hear what you guys think.
Did you have a specific question, Dan? I loved hearing all that, but did you have a specific question we could answer?
I guess my specific question is probably about, you know, it could be about boundaries, but where do I go from here? I don't want to be in limbo land for, you know, even a month. I need to tell her that, you know, she is a stay-at-home mom, doesn't have any money, doesn't, you know, so I would be supporting her through child support and whatnot. But what do I do from here? Do I, you know, how long? I don't want to let this go on forever, but I don't want to necessarily just kick her out of the house tonight either.
Yeah. The 2x4 of clarity that your therapist helped you get was very good. With that very, very simple question, and most things are simple, by the way, once you get clarity. There's another one coming for you. You're not sure when it's going to come yet, but you had one that was so clear and so powerful, you knew exactly what your next step was, and you implemented it. And you did it with love, and here you are telling us about it. This is going to happen for you 4, 5, or 6 more times yet in the next year, which means you're not in limbo. You're not in limbo land. You said you are, but just because you said you are doesn't mean you are. Limbo land is not, some people think I'm either married and happy or I'm divorced and miserable and everything else is limbo land. You're in a place that's enviable. You've made a decision. You're clear, you're confident, you're calm, you're loving. You've executed a decision that is the next step that's going to lead to the next step. You're out of limbo land now. There's wind in your sails and you're moving. You just happen to still be married to a woman that you may or may not stay married to. You don't need to know that now, but that's not limbo. You don't know a lot of shit about the next 20 years, right? So the thought process is that Dan Sherman is not in limbo. You're not. You just got out of limbo land. And you did a marvelous, beautiful job of it. And your story was perfect.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's like No, you just got out.
Yeah, you just got out of limbo. So how does that feel, Dan?
It's a relief, you know, a major relief.
Can you trust that more 2x4s are going to hit you and you're going to go, ah, I get it? Can you trust that?
Sure.
All right. And it may be to stay and love her to death forever, or maybe to leave. Who knows? We don't need to know that. But you have to believe that they'll hit you just like this one did. And this is exactly how it happens. And now you're sailing. And your kids are on board. And the wind is in your hair. And you got a York peppermint patty in your mouth.
And what you need to do is just the next indicated right action. The next one. That's it. There's no, you're not leapfrogging or hopscotching or whatever. It's just the next step, the next action. What's next? And with every step you take, you get more clarity. And I like what you said about you feeling like you were going to leap off a cliff. There's a great little talk that I think was Will Smith did about, he said, when you're standing at the doorway of the airplane about to do skydiving is when you're most frightened. And then once you jump out, you're like, oh, this is amazing. He said, so you're most frightened when you're actually the most safe. Mm-hmm. You're still on the plane, standing there. And so you can see how the fear is not rational. It doesn't really, you know, play by the rules. It just, you know, comes up the way it comes up. So you know now that the next thing that feels like a cliff, it may not be a cliff. And that once you step off it, you go, wow.
It could be a gift, not a cliff.
They always say you either, you know, so you find a net or you learn to fly. You know, those are the, a net appears or you learn to fly. So you're in a good place. Just know that this is the next chapter, this separation. It's not, again, the end of the road. It's actually a new road. And who knows what might happen? Who knows what you might create during some time apart? Might be amazing.
Well, what you've done is changed the size of that pie, that 90% slice, which was all woman, marriage, sex, relationship. And what you've done is sliced it back to some smaller percentage. You have to do that. I mean, part of knowing what your 2020 looks like is knowing what are the pieces in your pie look like? What are you giving priority to? And it's really counterintuitive. The less you prioritize saving your marriage, the better chances you have. It's just what it is.
Yep. And oh, by the way, for everyone, Limboland is a hell of your own making. That's all there is to it. We all think that, oh, she put me in Limboland. It's like, no, she made a decision and took an action. And then we put ourselves in Limboland waiting to see what the marching orders are. But we're sitting there in a cage with a door open. We have the keys, whatever metaphors you want. And Dan, you just went, I could just walk out of the cell. The door was open. Who knew? Who knew?
Who knew?
All right.
Well, let's read this first one. Now, we purposely don't put names on these because we don't know what you wish for confidentiality. But if it's your question and you want to raise your hand and let people know it's you, or if you want to ask a follow-up, go for it. But we have about 7 or 8 questions here, and as verbose as Tim and I can get, we have about an hour left in the meeting, so let's make the most of it. If you do want to raise your hand, make sure you have a question that you want to ask in so we can answer. So I'll read this real quickly. You ready, Tim?
Yes.
All right.
I am ready.
I've hit the point of feeling I'll be happier moving on from my wife. Her life choices and her lifestyle no longer match up with mine or what I see that I want to live in my happy vision. How do I get past the guilt I feel of asking for what I deem is fair for me? I'm going to highlight that because there's the question. How do I get past the guilt I feel for asking for what I deem fair for me? A reasonable level of selfishness, like the house, the dispersion of assets. I feel guilty asking for things I feel I need to provide me and my kids when I will have them. I feel she will feel angry. And here's a fear, like the fear of the consequence. She's going to get mad, World War III, especially long term. There's many feelings of guilt. I've been Mr. Nice Guy forever, and I still struggle with people pleasing. I could elaborate, but you probably heard it all, so that's, you know what I'm asking. So my first answer to this, what's fair is 50%. And I don't care what part of the world you're getting divorced in. Fair is that you lived and loved and laughed together for many years, and you built a lot of stuff together. So splitting assets and belongings, 50% is fair. And there's all kinds of math equations on, you know, the depreciated value of cars and stuff like that. Sometimes a mediator is necessary because a mediator helps keep the fairness thing clear because there's no emotion in the mediator. So the guilt may not just be this question here. The guilt isn't like you getting the nice TV and she getting the crappy one. This guilt is probably deeper. There's something behind this guilt that you haven't yet admitted. And that's what you said down at the bottom, that am I being a horrible dick of an asshole, an ass dick, right? The ass dick is from the ranch retreat. Somebody came, I'm an ass dick. I feel like such an ass dick for doing this. So the feelings of guilt are normal. It means that you're a good person. You're a person with fairness and compassion in your heart. You may also feel guilt for having failed your kids. You may feel guilt for not being a stronger, better man, for not saving the marriage, which are all just thoughts. Guilt is usually a monkey. It's a zoo of monkeys. I wish you had that clip, Tim, with the monkeys.
Yeah.
Guilt is normally a bunch of untrue thoughts that you have. And so I would say, think about those thoughts that that are causing you guilt, and realize that you're not an unfair man. You're a compassionate, sensitive, caring, intelligent man who's doing the best thing for himself and his kids. And you will agree to anything that's reasonable, that's fair. 50-50 is fair. I'm done there. What do you want to add to that, Tim?
I think that it's really classics to feel this way. I know that I've got a degree in divorce now, that I have had two of them. This last one was my graduate work. And my first divorce, I felt so bad that I gave her everything. I mean everything. I almost gave her my clothing, you know, but she got the whole deal, the house, the car, we had no kids, but, and I thought that I was going to feel good about that somehow. I thought it would assuage this guilt, but the guilt wasn't attached to anything rational, really. It just was, I felt like I had failed her miserably and could make up for it by doing this. So I think the equation of, you know, that, and of course I regretted it later and went, crap, where are all my CDs that I gave her? But I think the equation of that, this by doing some sort of overcompensation, it'll make everyone feel better, and it doesn't, because it's just stuff. It's just stuff. You want to go overboard, be overboard in being an awesome guy. Go overboard in making you know, a divorce as amicable, kind, and loving as it could possibly be. And it is possible to do that, believe it or not.
I love that, going overboard in that. That's good.
What's that?
I love the idea of going overboard and being the most kind person you can be.
Yeah, so don't go overboard in, you know, giving away the farm. Just go overboard on being compassionate, having empathy, realizing that you're both humans. There was a time when you were madly in love. You probably still like each other, all of that stuff. And that this is another, like, kind of, we're going to repeat this over and over. It's the next chapter, next chapter.
Merrick, was this your question?
I have a different question, if now is a good time.
Is it related to this question here?
No.
Okay, so, yeah, it's not your turn then. Keep your hand up. Because we're going to alternate between written questions and ones that you just think of on your own, okay? But if it's related to this topic here, feel free to make a comment or ask a question. We'll do one more written one, and then, unless there's any more comments on that.
Okay, let's do another written one.
You can keep your hand.
I'll read this one. My wife has denied her affair several times. I think it needs to be addressed, and I don't see a way to address it without at least acknowledging its existence. Tim and Steve, what do you think the best course of action is? It to ignore it? Agree, the note below is way too wordy, but I would like to talk about this and make her feel safe in doing so.
Oh, essentially, she left a diary out. I think she was intending to hide it and just forgot it, or maybe it was intentional that she wanted me to see it, but she left a diary out. It contains lots of her professing her love for another man.
Yeah, her and Brad, right? It's Brad.
No, it's what's his name? Bart. Thank you. Right. And it's clear, you know, she has strong feelings for him. I don't know if the relationship was physical. You'd probably suspect it from what I read, but I don't know for sure. She left this diary out. I probably, you know, violated her privacy in some way in reading it, but it was on the bathroom floor as a notebook. It doesn't say do not read. There's a notebook on the bathroom floor. And she's coming home tonight, and I'm still looking at, I mean, it's unacceptable. I'm struggling with how do I say this is an okay, however, still have empathy, because when I read her diary, I see how she felt that drove her this way. She felt unappreciated, unsupported, unrecognized, and unheard. And I think there's some truth to all of those feelings, and I don't want to minimize them, but simultaneously, it's not acceptable to go screw or mentally screw another man.
Right.
Period. I'm going to find a period. There, right? What you just said, get this recording right after this. What you just said is all you got to say. And I know we're prone to more words, more length, and more explanation about how hurt we are, or how unacceptable it is. But the way you just said that, Joe, period. Get a cup of coffee.
Drop. Yeah, that's like mic drop right there. And I would say, Joe, you asked the question, well, how do I still have compassion? It's exactly what you said. You can have compassion for the way she felt, but she's responsible for her actions, no matter what they are. And in this case, they were hurtful. And that's just the way it is. And those, it can be hard to separate those two, but that is what's going on. And so you can have a boundary that's like, this is not going to be okay. I understand how you got here. I have empathy for the pain, and some of it is my responsibility, and I take responsibility for that. Does that make sense, that those two are separate?
It does. I guess I have one last bit, mm-hmm. or one follow-up question, I should say. She's coming home tonight. She'll probably be home around midnight by the time her plane comes in and she drives and all that crap. And I'm toying with, do I send her a text with some of this? Do I wait till she comes home? Do I talk to her tomorrow? You know, I don't want to have a discussion like this at midnight. I also, you know, I'm just looking, what is the appropriate timing there?
Well, you actually know already, I bet. And that text is the worst way to communicate, except for logistics and hi. Yeah. That's a rule of thumb. It's like meet at the corner and hi. Midnight after a long trip and everyone's tired, really, really bad time to talk. Drunk, really, really bad time to talk. Sick, you know, so you know that tomorrow or whenever is a...
Tomorrow after work.
Yeah, when there's a little bit of calm or a little bit of quiet, if you can arrange that, where nobody is completely stressed out.
I would set an appointment, right, because women always feel ambushed. No matter what. Mm-hmm. Even if you said, let's talk for 10 minutes tomorrow over coffee at 8:30, she'll still feel ambushed. But at least she would. But so I would say, hey, better. I want 15 minutes of your time. Save 15 or 13 minutes of your time. And I just want to have a conversation real calm. And she may say, what about?
Go ahead. Maybe that's something I can text her as, hey, tomorrow night we need to chat for about 20 minutes. Can we find that time?
Yeah, because that's logistics. That's just, I'm asking for an appointment. And
won't say why or any of that, but I want 20 minutes to talk tomorrow.
You know, and she may immediately say, why? What's wrong? That's usually the knee-jerk reaction for most people.
Right. And we'll talk tomorrow.
You can just say, got some stuff on my mind I'd like to talk to you about.
Yeah, perfect. I'd like to. Not we need to. There's a big difference in we need to talk versus I'd like to talk to you.
Right. Yeah, and I got some stuff on my mind. In other words, it's kind of a way of saying, it's important. It's important, you know, but without going into, well, you're damn straight or, you know, or there's big trouble happening in little China or whatever. So you can just say, I really got some stuff on my mind or that I'm thinking about and I want to share that with you or I'd like to talk to you about it.
Will you share with us in Facebook how it goes, Joe?
Sure.
All right, good. Very curious.
One thing, let's see. Were you the one who asked about the marriage counseling assignment or is that am I mixed? Okay, that's a different one. So many questions.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Merrick, what's your question? We'll go live.
Hey, thanks. So If a wife leaves to be separated, how do you deal with the embarrassment when you feel like, oh my God, so I've got neighbors and they all see the wife's not here, her car's not here, the kids are gone, even though they visit me. It's just so embarrassing. I mean, how do I explain this to the world? Not that anybody's asking yet.
Why is it so embarrassing? It's easy to explain. We can help you with the words, but why is it so embarrassing?
I just feel like a failure, basically. Guy who, you mentioned it in some of your videos. Just feel like a guy who couldn't keep his family together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's this place you get to, Merrick, where you understand that her decision to leave isn't about you. You understand that it was a desperate plea to find a release from pressure, and she's doing it for herself. She's not doing it to you. It is not a reflection or an indictment on your inadequacy. And once you know that for sure, and somebody goes, what the fuck's going on? She's not here. Where's her car? And then you'll take a sip of coffee. Yeah, I drink a lot of coffee. And you'll smile and you say, we've entered a new season of our marriage. Period. Find your periods. We've entered a new season of our marriage.
Find your period. I think that's what we'll call this talk. I agree. And not only that, I think you probably know or suspect that your embarrassment about the neighbors is not about their judgment of you. It's about your judgment of you.
I wish I would have said that.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I think it's more about how I feel. Neighbors, I don't think they give a shit, but it just kind of occurs to you, you know? Yeah.
Well, you have to minimize the importance to it. It's like your dog ran away. Where's your dog? I haven't seen your dog for a week. Well, ran away.
Yeah, I'm in a new chapter with a season of my relationship with my dog. But indeed, that you have no power over your neighbors, but you do have all the power you need over you, and it's all about how you feel about this. And you're right. The hard truth about life in general is that nobody gives a shit about you. Now, that's a blanket statement, but, and yes, there are people who do, but in general, people are self-centered and they're worrying about their own stuff. And if they aren't, then they're just busybodies who own, you know, homeowners associations. They run that and they have no life. But most people are like only vaguely interested.
Yeah.
So. That's how it can help. You can help let go of that.
Get a bit more flavor to that. I know we, there's a time limit, but I was in a bad marriage previously, but I fell in love for all the wrong reasons. And this is my second one. I'm still married, obviously, but we're separately. And I can already see the neighbors like thinking, so this guy, you know, it hasn't worked out again. So he must be a real lunatic. It's just, these are just thoughts that run through your head or through mine. Yeah.
Are you a lunatic?
I don't feel like one. I think my kids like that.
Are you a horrible person who is mean to women and can't keep a relationship? You have no friends? Are you a narcissistic asshole?
No, the answer
no.
Is
no. Okay. No, period.
No, period.
So, yeah, that's the thing. This is what Tim's talking about. When you look in the mirror in the morning, every morning you get up and you wash your face and you go, you know, this situation kind of sucks. And it doesn't feel great to be exposing it to the world of the neighbors. But the truth is that you're fine. The truth is that you didn't screw this up. What she's doing is for herself, and it's not about you. And when you believe that, the concern about the neighbors goes away. You're not embarrassed anymore because you realize that she had to do this for herself. It's not about you. And it wasn't last time either.
I think this is a common thing to feel embarrassed, you know, in front of your friends, your family, your colleagues, your neighbors, whatever. And Merrick, if you had a neighbor who was getting separated or whatever, or was going through marital troubles, what would you think about them?
That's a good point. I would definitely not think anything bad about him. I would just tell him, that's unfortunate.
Right. You'd have probably compassion. That actually is the way, you might as well assume that that's what people think because you don't know. You can't read their minds. So unless they come up to you and say, hey, loser, you have no idea. So you might as well just assume that what they do is go, oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that. Period.
All right. Does that help, Mark?
Actually, that absolutely helps. And I just feels idiotic that I couldn't think of it myself.
Sometimes.
We got a little time left here.
Sometimes when somebody says, do you know what time it is? We'll say, sure, give me your watch. You have the answers already.
You have the answers.
Go ahead, Tim.
All right. So are we going to read another one here? Is that what we're doing?
Put it up. Yeah.
Okay. So where are we starting here?
I know I should be self-reliant.
I'm
sharing screen.
I know, but I can't. Okay, there you are. Statement. I know I should be self-reliant and outcome independent. I have the knowledge, but I am struggling to get there. I'm working the majometer and trying to be like a mountain lion. Question, do you mind expanding on a step-by-step process to help me achieve this status? Well, my first reaction is the course is kind of a step-by-step process. It's designed not as a recipe per se, although it kind of is. But we didn't set it up so that it would be like, you know, step one, step two, step three, five steps and you're there, because it's so much more complicated than that. But it is definitely progressive. Now, we tell you can start anywhere you want, but the truth is, best to start at the beginning and work your way all the way through, because it is designed to create a shift in thinking in you, a shift in your paradigm, which will then inform your actions, your decisions, your emotions, all of those things. So is there a step-by-step process? Yeah, you're part of it right now. But I also want to just mention, can you go back to the question a second, Steve?
I can.
Thank you.
I was going to bring up the sailboat picture for a second.
I just wanted to read that first part. By the way, don't worry about taking up time and stuff like that. The question you have is probably also 10 other guys are thinking it, and you getting your question answered helps more than just you. So, statement, I know I should be self-reliant. Yeah. Two things. One, careful what you make statements about, because they tend to come true. I think that it's best to say, today I am more self-reliant and outcome independent than I've ever been, but I'm still learning. That's a pretty good statement. And it's a pretty strong statement. And the reason I put it that way is, just knowing that there's such a thing as being self-reliant and outcome independent, already you're rung up than most people in the world. You know, just that knowledge that, oh, there's a way to actually have things to be in life and not be so worried about controlling the outcome all the time. You're already down the road further. And you'll always be learning more. So, having, more knowledge and struggling, yeah, I wouldn't talk you out of that, because that's actually where the learning is. So I wouldn't say, the choice between in the Matrix, when they just download, and he goes, I know karate. Everyone would like to do that, but that's just not the way we're wired. It's not the way life works. Life works as a progressive learning that usually includes failure and struggle. It's how we learn. So you're in a great place, it sounds like. You really are. You're doing it. Keep it up.
There's a reading list in the course, if you remember, and it kind of goes chronologically according to this sailboat trip we take. We do this in the course. We tell you a little bit about this. This is a process. It's a very fluid process. It's not a powerboat. You can't go from Shithole Island to Pleasure Island with a twin screw diesel powerboat, because you miss all the shit you're supposed to learn. The process is starting down here, and we can't go to the island of self-reliance and be a mountain lion if you don't first understand some of this stuff in here that we talked about. The very first island is knowing what you believe in. What are your founding principles? What are your masculine operating principles? Your nuts, non-negotiable, unalterable terms. So values, understanding how you got to be a people-pleasing, wishy-washy, nice guy. What confidence really, really is, not just the shit you're good at work. Self-reliance is a more advanced concept. So slow down. This is what Tim is saying. You're in a good spot. You're already aware, but also be aware that there's a process to this, and you can't skip islands. You shouldn't skip islands, I should say. So if you haven't read Hold On To Your Nuts, do that.
Yes. What do they say? You got to, you know, crawl, stand, walk, you know, in that order. And it's okay. And it's good. There's no judgment about it. There's no, you know, you should be further along. That's the self-judgment a lot. I should have known this already, or I should be further along. And just let that go. It's a waste of time.
Yeah. You ready to move on?
Yeah.
I've decided I no longer want to be in a marriage with an unfaithful, disrespectful wife. I want to do something interesting here, if I can. I was going to delete this. I was just going to...
Just to have that be the question?
Yeah, that's the question.
I've decided
I no longer want to be in a marriage with an unfaithful, disrespectful wife, period. There's another period, right? And sometimes we keep talking after this. After this is a decision, this is a non-negotiable term. It's a principle that you decided to operate by. It's important that you just sit with that for a minute before you start talking again, all right? Now we can start talking again. I'm ready for her to decide if she's going to end her affair and work with me on a new marriage or not. So these are almost contradictory. I no longer want to be in a marriage with an unfaithful, disrespectful wife, period. Well, I'm ready for her to tell me how this is going to go, right? this is what happens. We get wishy-washy. I am not going to be in a marriage with an unfaithful, disrespectful wife, period. But, you know, whenever she gets around to letting me know if she's going to end this and work with me or not, it'd be great. If not, well, I'm not sure what happens then, but I'm talking to a lawyer tomorrow. Again, I just want to take this right here and
delete
it out for a minute.
Black
right?
it out, yeah.
Because she is not a part of the decision. When a man decides that he will not be in a marriage with an unfaithful, disrespectful wife, that's the 2x4. And the birdie's swirling around your head. And now you get to decide what to do. You don't need to know for her to decide if she's going to end it or work with you in a marriage. What happens after a man decides this is he makes his next best decision. And he makes it from a place of assuredness and patience and calm. And he doesn't blame her. He doesn't think she's a wicked witch of the West. And so what happens in a question like this is that you get confused real fast. You think that it gets real confusing. So,
if you wanted to make this even stronger, I would say I have decided that I no longer will be in a marriage with an unfaithful, disrespectful wife. Yeah. That's a non-negotiable. I will not do this. I don't want to do this. I don't feel like doing it, or, you know, I'd rather not do that. No, I will.
There's this analogy that can be insulting, and it's that 9-year-old girl she's upset, she's been crying, and she's got her backpack, and she's going, "You're a poopy head. I hate you. All the other daddies are better than you. I hope you die." I'm running away from home, and she's going down the hallway. "I hate you, and I'm out of here." And she looks over to see if you notice, and you're reading the paper, and you go, "Well, dinner's at 7. Don't forget that." And you know, I'm leaving. And what she's doing is trying to threaten you. She's trying to hurt you. She's trying to intimidate you or give you an ultimatum of some sort to bend to her will. And so when a man says, "I'm no longer going to be in a marriage with an unfaithful, disrespectful wife," he doesn't want to be looking over his shoulder and say, "Did you hear me? What do you think about that?" And so what's the best way to present this to her with this choice? Well, again, this isn't a choice. You've decided there is no choice. You won't be in a marriage with an unfaithful, disrespectful wife. It doesn't mean divorce. You could just say that I'm not going to be in this marriage. I may not be in this house. I may not be in this bedroom. I may not be buying groceries for you. I may not be picking you up from work when you need a ride. That you decide I am no longer going to be in a marriage with an unfaithful, disrespectful wife. You don't present her with a choice. You declare what the new reality is. You declare what the new world order is. You declare your new position. And you don't do it with anger, and you don't do it with vitriol and spiteful words. You just say it.
And outcome independence means that you say it not in order for her to make a choice. You say it because it's it. This is who you are. This is who you shall be from this day forward. These will be your standards, and period, period. Another way thing you might do is you could present to her, this is what I'm looking for in a relationship. I'm looking for a wife that is faithful to me. I'm looking for a wife that respects me, who, you know, fill out the list. And it's just flipping it on its head, and instead of making it an accusation, which is okay if you want, but you can also just say it like, these are the things I want. And then it's kind of obvious, the question you don't even have to say is, are you these things? You know? And so presenting it is more, because you realize your nuts are about you. They're actually not about her. Your non-negotiables are yours, not hers. It's just, here's who I will be. Here's what I will have in my life. Here's the kind of people I will hang around and associate with. Here's the kind of ways you can count on me. So I hope that helps.
And that was really pointed advice. I mean, this is almost harsh in your face advice. So I'm curious.
Sorry, I can be a little bit.
Now, you and I both are like really animated. Like we're almost picking on him for going, I'm leaving. What do you think about the, but so who, if you ask this and you're on, let us know how this landed for you, or if anybody else is feeling something after hearing our answer, do you want to make a comment?
Steve, Tim, this is Christian Berger. I've got some feedback on that.
Okay.
I think in my experience, having experienced something like that and having some friends done that, like that's essentially a boundary. And maybe you guys can comment on this as well. You know, boundaries are high risk, but sometimes they're really important. But if that gets presented to this person's wife, you got to follow through on that. Otherwise, you would lose respect.
Absolutely.
And I think that's important to remember. Like, if you present your wife with a boundary and you don't follow through on it, that causes all sorts of other problems.
It causes more disrespect.
Good point. Same thing with kids, right? So, yes. In fact, if you want to have a good laugh, just Google Monty Python sketch called Marriage Counselor, I think is what it's called. And there's this really, he's the epitome of the wimpy nice guy, right? And as they're in marriage counseling, the marriage counselor seduces his wife who's sitting next to him and asks him to step outside so they can finish. And he's like, yeah, oh, all right. And then he's out in the hallway and he's going, you know, God talks to him and says, are you a mouse or a man? Get in there and fight for yourself. And he goes, oh, right. And he walks in, he goes, you can't do this. And something like that. And the guy says, I'm sorry, we're not quite done. And he goes, oh, right. And he walks back outside. Now, obviously, it's comedy and exaggerated, but sometimes we feel like a little like that, where it's like, that's it, I'm done, if that's okay with you.
I've got a question, okay, regarding this. What puzzles me is if you know that you're the one that created the problem in the first place and you are not healed in yourself, and then you go and make that declaration to her, why on earth would she stay?
Well, you're not doing it to make her stay. I mean, whether you're healed or fully actualized or not, your declaration of your boundary is not a thinly veiled Hail Mary attempt to make her go, oh my God, I forgot I love you.
No, I understand what you're saying. Maybe I used the wrong words there. But the point is, in a way, she's gone and done what she's done because of your actions. You're not actually healed. So you've not given her the opportunity to see the new you. So do you understand what I'm saying? So you've not given her the opportunity to see the change you, and you're setting a boundary before you've even healed yourself.
Well, first of all, John, I totally get what you're saying. And I would challenge the idea that you made her do this. If we're talking about an affair. Now, anything short of that, that kind of trespass over a line, maybe is